Welcome to a special episode of Irresistible Communication. Usually, these episodes are just 2 minutes long, but today is different. For years, many of you have asked me for an English version of my first book, The Aha Effect. That moment where a problem suddenly feels simple, where confusion turns into clarity, and where people not only understand you, but see the world differently because of what you said. The book itself remains only available in German, but I've put together something that comes very close. In the next 15 minutes, you'll get a clear and actionable overview of the book's core ideas, the very essence of the aha effect. One more note though, this episode is AI generated by Google's Notebook LM. The ideas are mine, but the words and voices you'll hear are not. I wanted to try this format to make the ideas accessible to you in the simplest way possible. I think it turned out pretty great, though. Let's dive in.
Today, we're diving deep into Michael Gerhardt's The Aha Effect. Our mission, to give you a shortcut, really, a way to shift your presentations from just forgettable talks to experiences that make your audience go, aha, I get it. We're digging into some surprising bits about communication psychology. Okay, let's unpack this.
What's fascinating right off the bat is this distinction Gerhardt makes. It's absolutely key. He talks about the wow effect versus the aha effect. Now, the wow, that's sort of the easy part, right? Big visuals, maybe some flashy tech, makes a splash, sure.
Yeah, like a momentary buzz.
Exactly. But it's often superficial. It doesn't last. The aha effect, though, that's different. It's sustainable. It needs the audience to engage intellectually. It leads them to grasp the why and the how. They can explain it themselves later. It's about changing perception, not just dazzling them.
That makes sense.
And it really underlines that getting better isn't just practice, practice, practice. It's about adopting the right mindset from the start.
Yeah, I get that. We've all sat through those wow presentations, lots of flash maybe, but you walk out.
Yeah.
And nothing's really changed for you. It really drives home that a presentation is this unique window, you know, a chance to get undivided attention and actually maybe change the minds. So let's jump into the first big idea, the power of being concise. Gerhardt puts it so well. If everything is important, nothing is important. We've all heard that, but he explains why even seasoned presenters fall into this trap. Often it's this fear, right? Fear of leaving something vital out.
We're trying to show how much they know.
Exactly. He uses this great analogy. You're in a supermarket, staring at a wall of tea. Every box shouts, important or bestseller. It's just noise. Instead of helping, it overwhelms. You end up grabbing anything just to get away, or maybe nothing at all. The one message that might have actually helped you is lost.
If we connect this to how people process information, it shows why only what sticks matters. Your audience, whether they mean to or not, they edit ruthlessly. They'll basically chop down everything you say to maybe two or three sentences. That's it.
Wow, just two or three.
Yeah, which brings us to this brilliant idea. Gerhardt highlights Henri Nannen's kitchen shout, the Küchenzurf. Picture Opa Hans reading the paper. He finishes an article, turns, and shouts to Oma Erna in the kitchen, Erna, Bonn raised taxes again.
Huh. I can picture that.
That single, simple shout, that's the core message. That's what sticks. That's what he'll remember and maybe tell his buddies later.
It's about boiling it down to its absolute essence.
Precisely. And the crucial part is you, the presenter, you have to decide what that kitchen shout is. You need to define it for your audience. Because if you don't, they'll pick something themselves. And it might not be the message you intended at all. You lose control.
And the source makes a strong case that, look, no topic is too complex for this. Think about JFK and the moon landing back in 61. His goal wasn't some dense multi-page document. It was incredibly simple, powerful. Land a man on the moon and return him safely before this decade is out. Everyone got that.
Crystal clear.
Right. And Gerhardt quotes Saint-Exupéry, perfection is when there's nothing more to take away. He even gives Hemingway's six-word story, for sale, baby shoes never worn, extreme conciseness. So how do you actually develop a good kitchen shout? The advice is practical. Say it naturally, as you're talking to a friend not writing ad copy.
Keep asking.
Is this the absolute most critical thing they need to walk away with? Whittle it down. One, maybe two sentences. Like a tweet, almost. That's your target.
That focus is paramount.
Okay, so once we've really nailed that core message, the next big shift Gerhardt talks about is perspective. And here's where it gets really interesting for a lot of us, I think. Because the default mode, often, is talking about ourselves, what we did, what we find fascinating. It's like that friend back from vacation, right? Mm-hmm. You get the hour-long saga about the lost luggage, the flight delays, every single breakfast buffet item.
Oh, yeah. We all know that person.
You tolerate it from a friend, maybe. But your presentation audience, they're definitely not there for your holiday snaps.
This is such a common blind spot. You absolutely have to distinguish what's interesting to you versus what's actually interesting and relevant to them. Gerhardt gives this perfect example. Michael Dell, back in 07, launching the Latitude XT laptop. This was just after the iPhone made multi-touch a big deal. Dell's team had done this amazing engineering work to get multi-touch on a laptop. He was clearly proud. But what did he show first?
Let me guess. Something super technical.
Bingo! An engineering test screen, full of diagnostics. He was focused on the how, the technical achievement, not the what. What could customers do with it?
It perfectly illustrates John Caples' point, which is also in the material. Bad ads often happen because people are so wrapped up in their own performance, they forget to tell us why we should buy.
Oof, that hits home.
Yeah.
It's the shift from look how great our product is to look what great things you can do with our product.
Exactly. It reframes everything.
It really hammers home that presentations aren't for us. They're for the audience, to help them get where they want to go. I love the bit about Professor Donald Cary and his who cares principle, encouraging students to actually interrupt and ask that.
And he stops and explains why it matters to them.
As presenters, we need that mindset built in. You have to care, genuinely care, about where the audience feels the pinch, their actual problems, their needs, even the ones they haven't voiced yet. Because fundamentally, people buy solutions to their problems. Your job isn't data dumping. It's making it super easy for them to see the connection, to find their answers in your message. It means putting their interests smack bang in the center. Always ask, what problem does this audience actually have right now? Why are they even listening? If you can't answer that clearly, you're probably off track.
But it's not just logic, is it? Which brings us to another really fascinating area. The source explores emotions, the hidden drivers, what Gerhardt calls the real reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, just as a simple example. Why do people pay, say, 13 euro for a Moleskine notebook? You can get two perfectly decent ones for three down the road.
Yeah.
Rationally, it doesn't quite add up, does it?
Right, and that's the exact question Gerhardt uses to open this up. The real reason isn't just the paper or the elastic band. It's the story, the connection to Van Gogh, Picasso, Hemingway, that whole legacy, which they actually put in a little leaflet inside.
Ah, the story they tell themselves.
Exactly. Creative people buy products for creative people. People buy it because it fits their self-image or the image they aspire to. It feeds their internal narrative about who they are.
So it's identity aspiration.
Yeah.
Not just paper.
Absolutely. And this leads straight to what Gerhardt calls decision blindness. It's how our brains work. We often make an emotional choice first. Then, like instantly, we build this perfectly logical story to justify it.
Uh-huh. Post-rationalization.
Right. He mentions that jam tasting study. People confidently explained why they preferred the one they haven't chosen. They created the reasons afterwards. It backs up J.P. Morgan's famous line, a man always has two reasons for doing anything, a good reason and the real reason.
Okay. The good reason is the logical one we tell everyone.
And the real reason is often emotional, tied to fear, ambition, status, saving face.
So what does this all mean for us, putting a presentation together? It means we have to dig deeper. Ask, what's really driving my audience emotionally? It's usually not just the facts and figures. It might be fear of falling behind, desire for recognition, needing to save time, avoiding hassle, making their boss happy.
Well, those human things.
Yeah. So it's not just what you say. It's who's listening and how their own internal story, their emotional state, shapes how they even hear your message.
And this loops back to something that sounds obvious, but we forget. What matters most to people? Themselves. Their problems, their future, their standing. They want praise. They want to avoid trouble, save money, look good, get ahead, have less stress. These are the currents underneath. The real insight here is that understanding who they are, their role, their worries, their beliefs, the context is way more critical than just reciting features. Facts are safe. They feel comfortable to deliver.
Right. Less risky.
But tackling those real reasons, that takes empathy. It takes effort. You need to figure out which of your good reasons actually connects with their real reason right now.
Okay, this next part really pushes us. The source argues that very effective presentations, they have to challenge existing beliefs. They need to shake things up a bit. Think about Steve Jobs unveiling the MacBook Air in 2008. Mm-hmm. Before that, the common wisdom was laptops needed DVD drives, lots of ports. That was just how laptops work.
Totally. It was the standard.
Jobs had to break that belief. He had to make people accept that thinness, portability could actually be more important than those things. And pulling it out of that envelope.
That visual was key.
It created that moment of, wait, what? It directly challenged the status quo in people's minds.
And Gerhards is pretty blunt about this. He says, if your presentation doesn't challenge or change the audience's view somehow, it's basically a waste of time. He even references JFK again. The only reason to give a speech is to change the world. Maybe a bit dramatic, but the intent is clear. Aim for impact.
It's about creating change.
Your goal is to bring them to what Gerhards calls the point of no return. He uses this analogy of a woman finding a suspicious note from Anna in her partner's pocket. In that instant, everything shifts. What was maybe ignored or unseen becomes glaringly obvious. She can't unsee it. A decision, some kind of decision, is now inevitable.
Wow. That's powerful. So in our presentations, we're trying to create that kind of clarity.
Exactly. That moment where they see things differently, understand the implications, and they can't just go back to thinking the old way. Even if they choose not to follow your specific recommendation, their perspective has shifted.
So the question for us is, what belief needs to change? What do they need to realize to hit that point? It's about making the old way feel, well, obsolete or inadequate. Okay, so let's tie this all together. How do we actually take the audience on this journey to the aha effect? Gerhards uses this neat idea from improv theater, you know, where two people build a story, one line each. You quickly learn your idea of the story isn't always your partner's. You have to listen, adapt, meet them where they are.
Yes, and that applies directly here, because your story is not your audience's story. It's such a crucial point. People accept ideas or buy things when they fit into the narrative they already tell themselves about their lives, their challenges, their goals.
Right. It has to resonate with their world.
Which is why the audience is always the hero of your presentation.
Yeah.
Not you, not your product. They're tuned in because of their problems, their needs, their hopes for a better outcome. The aha effect. That's the moment they think, aha. He's talking about me. This is my situation. I hadn't seen it like that before. That personal click is everything.
So we need to become like audience whisperers.
Yeah.
Constantly trying to see from their side, get their unspoken needs, use their language.
That's a good way to put it.
But there's this interesting tension Gerhards points out. It's about doing it right, not pleasingly. He gives examples like Eddie Van Halen's Eruption solo or the first iPhone. These weren't products of focus groups asking, what do you want? They came from a deep understanding of unmet needs, delivering something unexpected and superior.
Exactly. If you only aim to please, you aim too low. You get incremental improvements, not breakthroughs. The real challenge is discerning those deeper needs they might not even be able to articulate yet.
And this loops us back again, doesn't it, to emotions being key for actually convincing people.
Absolutely. Gerhards shares that incredible Bill Gates TED Talk story from 2009 about malaria. Remember that?
Vaguely. Didn't he do something dramatic?
He released mosquitoes right there in the auditorium to make this powerful, influential audience feel personally affected, even for a moment. He said, there's no reason only poor people should have this experience.
Whoa. Okay, that's memorable.
He made them feel vulnerable, then empowered them as potential heroic fighters by showing solutions. It underlines Jill Bolt Taylor's point. We aren't thinking creatures who feel. We're feeling creatures who think. Decisions start with emotion.
So it's not just abstract facts. It's got to connect emotionally.
Yeah.
Feel real.
Yes. Emotions are tangible. They link to real worries, real hopes. The audience's self-story, I need to solve this. I want to look competent. I want to avoid risk. Look, you need both facts and emotions, but the order matters. Emotion creates the pull, the relevance, the initial yes in their gut.
Okay.
Then the facts come in. They provide the logic, the justification. They help the audience build their good reasons to support that gut feeling. The aha effect is when it all clicks together. The emotional pull aligns with the rational argument. That's the point of no return. It's true conviction, not just surface-level persuasion.
This really does build into a clear path. Gerhards actually lays out five steps, doesn't he? We've got a roadmap to get there.
Yes, he calls it the path to aha. It's a practical sequence. One, pick up the audience, start where they are, get their world, their context, make them feel seen. He means me.
Okay, direct first.
Two, show the problem. Gently reveal a flaw or friction in their current way of thinking or operating. Maybe something they hadn't noticed. A hidden cost, a missed opportunity. Make it resonate personally.
Make it relevant to them.
Three, offer the solution. Now deliver your kitchen shout. Simple, clear, concrete. Aim for that initial gut reaction. Yes, that makes sense. Even if they still have questions.
It's a core message.
Four, Provide good reasons. Now you bring in the logic. Answer the yes, but questions. Give them the evidence and the justification they need to support that initial yes. Build the rational case.
Back it up.
And five, seal the deal. Guide them to that point of no return. Make the next step clear and compelling. Lead them to that final, aha, okay, if that's my situation, then this really is the solution to me. The decision feels inevitable.
That's a really clear framework, going from connection to conviction. When you pull all this together, It really paints a picture of a different way to present, doesn't it? It's more, well, patient, maybe, humble, Definitely respectful of the audience. It's demanding on us as presenters, for sure.
It takes more work up front.
But it feels more rewarding. It values the audience, builds trust, aims for real change. It's about actually making people smarter, more capable.
And it boils down to truly caring about your audience, Asking what they actually need, not just what they say they want or what's easy for you to tell them. Like Anke Schroeder says, presenting means talking to people. Treat them like a good friend you genuinely want to help.
Listen hard, be honest.
Yeah, and have the courage to give them what will actually improve things for them, even if it's challenging. It takes effort, absolutely, But that's how you earn respect. That's how you actually move the needle. So here's something for you, our listener, to think about. If you treated your very next presentation like a truly sincere conversation with a friend, someone whose well-being you genuinely care about, what's the one single thing you'd immediately change about how you prepare or deliver it?
That's it for this special episode. I hope it gave you a taste of the aha effect and sparked some aha moments of your own. If it did, I'd love for you to share it with someone who might find it helpful too. Keep lighting the path.